Good afternoon. Welcome to Senate Finance. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018. The time is 1:35 p.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With us this afternoon, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon. Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good afternoon.
Senator Stevens. Senator Olson is excused from today's meeting, and Senator Machicki is presenting a bill in another committee and should join us during the process of the meeting. On today's agenda, we have four items. SB 198, UAA Long-Acting Contraception Study, HB 76, Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund, HB 128, Shellfish Enhancement Project Hatcheries, and SB 142, the Capital Budget. Is there anything to come before the committee before I begin? If I could direct members' attention to SB 198. On 3/26/2018, we had Senate Bill 198 introduced. The public hearing was opened and closed. My office received no amendments. I'd like to invite Heather Carpenter, staff to Senator Kelly, to the microphone. Ms. Carpenter, if you could introduce yourself and provide a summary for the people of Alaska to understand the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Heather Carpenter, staff to Senator Pete Kelly. As a refresher, Senate Bill 198 is an act relating to a study of the effectiveness and cost of providing long-acting reversible contraception to women with substance abuse disorders. Just as a brief refresher, this was specifically an outcome of Senator Kelly's efforts to eradicate fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and as well, this would address the population that is impacted by neonatal abstinence syndrome. So this would be a three-year study conducted by the University of Alaska Anchorage Center for Alcohol and Addiction Studies.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Bishop, would you like to cover the fiscal note?
Yes, ma'am. Departments, University of Alaska, Appropriations, University of Alaska, Allocations, Anchorage Campus. The OMB component number is 753. In year one, $148,100. In fiscal year 19, it's $148,100. Fiscal year 20, $188,900. And fiscal year 21, $163,100. The source is the general fund, 1004. The analyses is the study will begin in July 2018 and be conducted in three phases. Phase one will be a development year to establish and convene advisory panels, develop clinical protocols and research procedures. Phase two will be an implementation and evaluation period through March of 19 through May of 2020 to implement referral protocols, assemble cohorts, data collection, and network collaboration. Phase three will be a data and analysis reporting from April of 19 through June of 2021. And that is to further acquire data analyses, strategy development, outcomes reporting, strategy recommendations, et cetera, et cetera. So the funding covers personnel costs for time contributed by the principal investigator, co-investigators, and case management individuals, and associated commodities necessary for the study. And that is the genesis of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Is there questions on the fiscal note? We are going to, the fiscal note will be reported out as forthcoming. We do have some corrections to make, but not in the monetary value, but the language portion of the back, possibly a funding source. But the fiscal note will be forthcoming as we this bill exit committee. Senator Bishop, may I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 198, version 30-LS1393/David from committee, with, as you described, a forthcoming fiscal note and the individual committee recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 198, an act relating to the study of the effectiveness of cost and cost of providing long-acting reversible contraception to women with substance abuse disorders moves from committee with forthcoming fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations. Brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. We're back on the record. The next item before us is the CS for House Bill number 76, an act relating to Mariculture Revolving Fund and loans and grants from the fund and providing for an effective date. The bill's sponsor, Representative Dan Ortiz, is with us this afternoon, as well as Liz Harpold, staff to Representative Ortiz. Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Dan Ortiz. I represent Southern Southeast Alaska, District 36.
And for the record, my name is Liz Harpold, staff to Representative Ortiz.
Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and honorable members of the Senate Finance Committee for agreeing to hear House Bill 76. Madam Chair, this bill amends the existing Alaska Mariculture Revolving Fund to allow up to 40% of the fund to be used for loans to permitted shellfish hatcheries for planning, construction, and operation. Alaska shellfish farms currently do not have a stable supply of seed for the propagation of oysters and no regular in-state source of seed for resident aquatic plants and other shellfish. A stable supply of seed is one of the many hurdles the industry must overcome to grow and become a viable Alaskan industry. This bill, Madam Chair, will amend the program to shift its focus and eligibility from individual mariculture farmers to include shellfish hatcheries that would market stock to local Alaskan mariculture farmers. The mariculture industry in Alaska is not yet fully developed and is extremely high risk from a financial standpoint. These obstacles make private financing difficult to obtain, but this bill will enable Alaskans to maintain their businesses and grow Alaska's mariculture industry. And if I might add, we're all aware here in this room about the importance of the seafood industry to the overall economy of Alaska. And if we can do what we can to partner in promoting the mariculture, development of the mariculture industry, that's going to be an added boom to the overall economy of the state of Alaska. So this bill, if it was passed, would add to the economic diversity of economy of our fisheries. And I'd also like to note that Senator Stevens had introduced a companion bill, SB 95, and that was heard and passed out of Senate Labor and Commerce, and I'm happy to report that he is a co-sponsor of HB 76, and I thank him for that. And with that, Madam Chair, I will pass it on to Liz Harpold, who will walk you through a sectional of the bill.
Ms. Harpold.
Thank you. Before us, we have version I of HB 76, which was the committee substitute from House Fisheries. To begin, the first section sets the policy for loans to hatcheries. It's pretty straightforward. Section 2 is conforming language. It includes this new loan as being part of the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. Section 3 is a new section, which my boss mentioned. It includes now the 40% of funds are appropriated to be used for hatcheries. It still protects 60% of that revolving loan fund for farmers. Section 4 is more conforming language. It gives the power to the DCCED to run and administer this program, as they currently do. Section 5 sets out the limits the amount that a department may make in grants to nonprofits. That's something that's new to that 40% of the fund being allowed to hatcheries. The limit on this will be $500,000 total in grants issued to hatcheries. Section 6 is additional conforming language. It expands the class of persons eligible for a loan from the fund to include state residents or entities organized under state law. Section 7 specifies those residency requirements for individuals and the nonprofits that could apply for these monies. Section 8 establishes the new loan terms for loans from the fund for hatcheries. Section 9 sets the cap for amount of a loan.
Yeah, sorry, excuse me. Section 9 does set the cap for the amount of a loan for total for the hatcheries that could be outstanding loans and also for farmers. Section 10 is additional conforming language that includes extends the purpose of the loan can be used for somebody purchasing a boat for the operation of a hatchery in addition to a farm, as previously stated. Section 11 it includes loans to hatcheries. It's also conforming language, excuse me, getting ahead of myself. It includes loans to hatcheries in regards to the calculation of interest rates underneath this program. Section 12, it just further establishes the conditions for allowing a loan to be given to a hatchery. It ensures that it is viable for them to repay the loan and also that the purpose of this hatchery or enhancement is in the best interest of the public. Section 13 provides when the department may require repayment of the principal and interest of loans made from funds to residents of the state or entities organized under the laws of the state. This is similar to other loan programs the state department or that this department operates. Section 14 allows for a certain association of limited entry permit holders to levy and collect an assessment from its members to secure or repay a loan from the fund. It's a voluntary assessment that they can use to promote the operations of the association or, as I stated, to repay the loans that they might owe. Section 15 is an additional conforming language having to do with the disposal of property if there is a default on the loan. Section 16 adds new definitions for shellfish enhancement projects that were not previously included. Section 17 clarifies that the changes made to the bill are not retroactive. They don't apply to the loans made previous to this effective date, and Section 18 provides for that effective date.
Are there questions on the sectional? I have a question. I'm going back to read the sectional analysis that we have. Mm-hmm. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. I have questions regarding Section 13 and clarity on the repayment. Is there any questions of the bill sponsor before we move to the department for additional clarifications? Thank you for introducing your bill.
Thank you very much.
I am looking, I have Brittany Haywood in Anchorage. Is there anyone here in Juneau from the department? Thank you, Senator. I'm not sure people can hear you on the record, but I appreciate that. Brittany Haywood. Brittany, are you available online to answer questions?
Yes, I am.
Ms. Dion Haywood, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
We can. Brittany, this is Senator McKinnon. I'm looking at Section 13, and I'm wondering if you can provide some clarity on when a person receives the loan, how long they can defer payments on that.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon. If I could have just 1 second. Section 13. So it would be, Senator McKinnon, it would be 6 years for a farm or 11 years if it was to a hatchery. And, again, this fund is going to be split between those two entities.
Is there a reason that we're deferring payment of interest and principal for that period of time?
Senator McKinnon, I believe that the idea is that because it is a nascent industry and that they kind of need time to get projects off of the ground, that goes into the deferral period.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. I had somewhat similar questions in that I really don't know the life cycle of a gooey duck, for example, and I wasn't sure if there was some biological reasons why a farm or a hatchery would need to see that many years of deferral. And I don't know if this is a Department of Commerce question or if this is more of a, I see other
fish and game.
Yes, online. To say, is it more of a construction issue? Is it a permitting issue? Is it a biological issue of why there's a significant delay in payment?
Through the chair, Senator Van Imhoff, I would, if Fish and Game is on the line, they would be more of the subject experts on that. There are grow out periods for farmers, but I will defer to Fish and Game.
Fish and Game is not on the line right now.
Oh, they're not. Okay. Through the chair, Senator Van Imhoff, my understanding is that that gooey ducks are about 9 to 10 years on a grow out, and oysters would be somewhere in the range, somewhere I believe around 5 years.
Thank you for those questions. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Mr. Raybung, if you could identify yourself for the record, and then if you have comments on the section that we are asking about or directly to Senator Von Imhoff's question, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, I'm Sam Raybung with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, statewide aquaculture planning and permitting. To answer the question, this bill is modeled after the Salmon Fishery Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund with a deferral period based on the biological life cycle of the organisms. It takes time for the produced organisms to get in an aquatic farm situation, for the produced organisms to get to a harvestable size in order to recover the cost and repay the loans.
Senator Von Imhoff, questions?
So I appreciate that. We did learn it takes about 5 or 6 years for a gooey duck to become fully mature, I suppose. That's what I heard. And then oysters a little bit longer, which is why you have set the terms for 6 and 11 years. Okay. I mean, you can't hurry up biology. So what it sounds to me, though, there's just going to be a large balloon payment on year 7 because there's no interest being paid during that time as well. So then in year 7, it would be the first principal and then all the interest up until that date. And then is the principal going to be amortized over 10 years or 12 years? Do you know that information?
Through the chair, this would probably be better answered by Commerce, but it's my understanding if it's like the salmon fishery enhancement loan, it is amortized into the annual payment.
We will get that answer from Commerce. Any other questions for Fish and Game, Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the Department of Fish and Game, I want to ask a question about seaweed production, but is that even in your purview?
Through the chair, yes it is. It's an aquatic farming product.
Great. So can you tell us the success of other states in producing? I mean, we have some fellows I know in my area who are trying to produce seaweed and getting a project, a long time project in mind. But it looks to me like other states have been quite successful on the West Coast in seafood production. Anything you can share about that?
Through the chair, yes, it's definitely a growth industry at this time. It's successful both on the East Coast as well as the West Coast. In my opinion, the time is right.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Any other questions from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Raven, could you tell me how a hatchery would work for oysters?
Through the chair. Yes, so broodstock or adult oysters would be collected from a farm site and taken into a hatchery and induced to spawn, which is basically temperature manipulation. And their broadcast spawners, the larvae, would set and grow as juveniles, and then the spat, the small oysters, are then distributed to nurseries and farms for further grow out to market size. And for oysters, this takes 3 years or sometimes more.
Follow up?
Senator Bishop.
So this hatchery, is it shore-based, or does a hatchery have to lease land from DNR to do this hatchery? Is it done in the ocean?
Through the chair, it could be either. They can be shore-based. They just have to pump salt water then, or it could be floating on a barge or something like that.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The brood stock for these hatcheries, where do they come from? In-state, out-of-state, and are you worried about bucket biology? And
Through the chair. So oysters do not reproduce naturally or occur naturally in Alaska, so they are all sourced from out-of-state through approved sources on the West Coast. And at this time, they're not there's no wild stock in Alaska, so there's no genetic concerns or bucket biology. They're, for all intents and purposes, a farm product.
Thank you.
How are they not considered an invasive species?
Madam Chair, they can't reproduce in Alaska. It's too cold.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So just curious, out of the, it says shellfish hatcheries, does that include crab, shrimp?
Through the chair, yes, aquatic farming statutes allow for those species. Currently, nobody's doing that because our aquatic farm statutes require positive control, rearing the organisms under positive control, which means captivity. And those organisms, in Alaska anyway, Alaskan organisms don't fare well in captivity.
Thank you for those comments. Other questions from committee members? Thank you for joining us in Senate Finance today. Is there further questions on the construction of the bill?
I just have
brief of these. We're back on the record. Senator Von Imhoff, and I'm sure the entire Finance Committee has multiple questions regarding the Mariculture Loan Fund. And so from the Department of Commerce, instead of delaying public hearing, we would like an accounting of the fund, a short history. We would like to know how many loans are out there, the deferral rate, what's left in the balance to be able to loan against, and other financial specifics about this particular revolving loan fund, the payments that are coming in, and the deferral rates. Senator Von Imhoff, other items. We want a breakdown of the Mariculture Fund. With that, I'd like to open the public hearing on House Bill 76. We do have some invited testimony. Ms. Sione Haywood, we have you under invited testimony. Did you have comments to offer the committee regarding House Bill 76?
Senator McKinnon, I can answer the question that was asked earlier of Fish and Game on the balloon payments at 7 or 11 years, if you would like.
Please.
Sure. So that, on the initial period, there is no payments, nor is there any interest that accrues. So the payments would start at that, after that initial period.
So if I could follow up, this is Senator McKinnon. So for the first 6 years, there is no interest. We've loaned money, principal, and received no money in return.
That is correct. The payments start at after the initial period for farmers. Or it at the after the initial period for hatcheries and the changes to this bill.
Brittany, is that similar to the salmon enhancement or the hatchery? I'm sorry, not the hatchery, but the other funds?
Mariculture.
Yes, it is correct. It is similar to the Fisheries Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund.
Is it similar conditions to the farming operations in the ocean?
Senator McKenna, I'm not sure I understand the question exactly, but there's no the fisheries enhancement would be through the regional aquacultural associations, through the hatchery system. I feel like I'm not understanding your question, so I will let you maybe clarify for me.
Thank you. On page 5, section 10, line 3, a loan under 1610.910, and this has to do with utilizing the fund for purchasing boats, talks about farming. I assume it's farming, mariculture, because we're talking about boats.
and it's attempting to add hatcheries to be able to purchase a boat under the hatchery program.
Senator McKinnon, yes. So this would allow the hatcheries to purchase a boat if it's used for the hatchery business. They could purchase a work boat. The farmers can already purchase a vessel under the loan fund currently, but it's in addition to allow a hatchery to purchase that equipment in addition to other operational needs.
And then when we look down at Section 13, it seems like there's two different standards for – that's where I'm getting confused in the language that we have from lines 21 through 31 – on shall or may, as far as repayment.
Senator McKinnon, I am looking at that text right now.
So it would be the difference between 1610.910A1 versus 1610.910A2.
To clarify, lines 28 versus lines 30, is that correct?
I'm on line 25. AS 1610.910A1 says you may not be deferred for a period of more than 6 years of the loan. On 1610.910A2 for a period of up to 11 years after the loan is made. A1 is for the farms, and A2 is the hatcheries, which is why I asked the question of whether we're doing things differently for farming than we are doing for hatcheries. And if so, I'd like to know why.
Senator McKinnon, that is correct. There is a difference between the farmers and the hatcheries. My understanding is that the language that was taken for the hatcheries is based off of the fisheries enhancement statutes that outline the fisheries enhancement revolving loan fund. And in those statutes, it is 10 years.
Thank you.
And the farmers, in this case, will be 6 years.
Thank you for those comments. Did you have any additional comments on the overall structure of the bill? Is the administration supportive?
Yes, the administration is supportive of the bill, and no, I don't have any other comments on the structure of the bill.
Thank you. Any other comments at all?
No. I did hear the request on the breakdown of the loan funds, and we will get that prepared.
Thank you. The next person under invited testimony is Julie Decker, the Executive Director of Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. Welcome to Senate Finance. If you could identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Julie Decker, Executive Director of Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. I'm also testifying today as the chair of the Alaska Mariculture Task Force. At the request of industry and communities in 2016, Governor Walker created the Mariculture Task Force. It has 11 members from a broad background, including two members of the administration, Department of Commerce and Fish and Game, and industry representatives, including CDQ groups, seafood industry, aquatic farmers, and others interested in moving this forward, including the University of Alaska. we have just recently completed our two-year comprehensive planning process. I included an excerpt of this plan with our testimony to the chair of the committee. One of the top five priorities in the plan is this bill and the next bill that you'll be hearing. They're components of moving the industry forward. Also in the plan, if you look at the vision and goals, the goal is to grow a $100 million industry in 20 years. We had originally started out with the vision of a $1 billion industry in 30 years, but through work with McTowell Group and some others on economics and sort of what's happening in the world and other regions, we felt more comfortable with reducing that timeline and making our goal a little smaller to fit what we thought was most realistic and not being too far shooting. So a $100 million goal, primarily with six species that have some activity in them in the state of Alaska right now. Those are Pacific oysters, which is, again, the only non-native species allowed in the state of Alaska because they do not reproduce. The rest of the species are all local species to Alaska, which include geoduck, sea cucumbers, blue mussels, and then seaweed. And there's actually several species of seaweed that have had some commercial activity recently. So with those six species, we have a plan for how to develop this industry. And a couple things I wanted to clarify is what mariculture means when we talk about it in the state of Alaska. We are not talking about finfish farming because that's not allowed. It is not legal in the state of Alaska. What we are talking about is aquatic farming, which means a private business comes in and puts seed out in a controlled area. They grow, harvest, and sell that product. They own that product. Enhancement, which is similar to what we do with our salmon fishery. We go in and enhance an entire fishery for a common property use, which that means sport, subsistence, commercial fishermen, everybody gets to benefit from that. And then restoration, which means we go in and we help species that may be struggling for survival for certain reasons. And there's positives to that, including commercial positives, like in the Pribilof Islands right now we have blue king crab that are very they're struggling. The biological populations have been struggling, and therefore many times they have to shut down the red king crab fishery because they don't want to accidentally take some bycatch of blue king crab, and the numbers are that low. So there's areas where we could actually restore populations. It would help also nearby fisheries as well. So this is all about economic development. This bill in particular basically uses a state asset, this $5 million fund, and tweaks it a little bit so it works better for this beginning developmental period that the industry is at. We structured it working with industry and the administration to look a lot like the components of the Salmon Fishery Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund. And there's reasons why. It's to allow the hatchery to get sort of stable in its production and its techniques so that then it can repay those loans. And we have the example with our salmon enhancement program where hatcheries have been successful over the 30-year period of having that program. They have paid those loans back with interest eventually. The interest gets charged and paid back to the state. And now we have a renewable a fishery that's adding to the state's economy every single year, $100 to $200 million for salmon enhancement. So we think it's a successful program. We're trying to help use that to model some mariculture development as well. May I continue?
Briefly.
Okay. A couple of examples of recent developments that are very, very positive. We've seen in 2017 aquatic farmers apply for permits that could quadruple the amount of acreage that's actually farmed right now. Primarily, these are oysters and seaweed species. We've seen new investment interest from partners from seafood processors, fishermen, CDQ groups, tribes, and tourism businesses that are looking at how to make mariculture work for us. We've seen some new research funded for tools that will actually help expand the industry. And we've seen, as Senator Stevens mentioned, a cluster of seaweed development happening on Kodiak Island, everything from the hatchery to the processing to the farmers and product development. So these are very, very positive. We feel like we're really at the crux of breaking this open. We have a plan, like I said, for over the next 20 years what to do. These are some of the basic steps that we need to take. So I appreciate your listening to my comment.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's great. I'm encouraged by what you're trying to do here, and it hasn't been in too many years ago, I think, that the shellfish industry had a $30 million revenue to the state of Alaska. But on the second point here, have you had any problems obtaining tidelands or leases from the Department of Natural Resources to expand this business and going forward to hit your target of $100 million and eventually $1 billion? So, do you have any comment on that?
It's through the chair, excuse me. It's definitely one of the hurdles. There's a public process involved because it's public lease area. Trying to balance that public potential for public use versus a private use of the area is always challenging. We're hoping some of these farms that have been applied for this past year will be permitted. It looks like they've been through two of the larger sites that are, you know, over 100 acres in size each, have got through the agency review period. And, you know, we'll see how the public, there's a 30-day public comment period. We, as a part of our plan, we recognize that there's sort of the public perception issues as well all the time whenever you're doing things in the public. And so we recognize public education as a big piece. We've been trying to do some of that as we go to communities that have some of these farm sites being applied for. I don't know if there's a good answer to your question. It's one of the hurdles, and we're working on that.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Thank you, Ms. Decker. Other questions from committee members? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wonder, Julie, if you could reflect a little bit on the markets that are available out there. I think specifically about seaweed. It seems to be an enormous market that we barely touching. Other states, other countries are.
Seaweed is a very large industry worldwide, $6 to $10 billion, depending on the year. But it's hardly touched. I mean, it's not being touched in Alaska hardly at all. It's something that actually works really well as a complement to our existing industries, our existing seafood industry, in the sense that you plant it in the fall and you harvest it in the spring. It's an annual crop. We have a lot of excess fishing vessels and processing capacity at those time periods, so we really think it would be a really good fit for Alaska. We have a lot of space, waters, clean waters, and it would add product to companies like processors who are already active in the marketplace and selling seafood. So there's definitely increased interest, especially particularly from our processors just recently, actually.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Thank you, Ms. Decker. Can you talk to us about sea otters?
Yes, I can. In fact, I have this nice little thing on my wrist right here. I encourage everyone to buy some sea otter products from your local producer. They are a serious challenge. We're hoping there's some approaches to tackling them and encouraging harvest, managed harvest, you know, like we do our other species in Alaska. That's going to take some federal partnership and some federal impetus. I'm hopeful that there's a way to get there.
Ms. Decker, I was not being tongue-in-cheek, and I actually didn't see your bracelet. But for a business to survive in Alaska waters, specifically one that is looking at harvesting oysters, gooey ducks, or anything else that can be scavengered by sea otters, what we invest we can see destroyed because we don't have the ability to stop the predators from coming in and destroying a hatchery or a farm, depending on how and where they're located. Ms. Decker.
And just to that point, one more thing. Oysters are contained in cages, and so that's a positive for them as far as, you know, otter predation. And seaweed is not something that otters eat. So those two species look good so far.
Thank you. Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today.
Thank you.
We will be moving throughout Alaska if there's others online. It looks like most folks are here in Juneau. We do time date folks' names coming in, so we work off a time date. Tommy Marsh from Ocean, Alaska, from Ketchikan. Is Tommy here? Just hung up. Next person, Tommy Sheridan. Offnet from Silver Bay Seafood.
Hello, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can. Welcome to Senate Finance. Your name, affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. My name is Tommy Sheridan. I'm Silver Bay Seafood's Director of Government Affairs, and I'm here to testify in support of Alaska House Bill 76. For those of you unfamiliar with Silver Bay, the company began in 2007 as a single salmon processing facility in Sitka, Alaska, and has since grown into one of the largest seafood companies in the state, currently operating large-scale seafood processing facilities in Sitka, Craig, Valdez, Naknek, and Metlakatla. Silver Bay also has aspirations for developing production-scale mariculture operations in Sitka Sound, which at full production would yield up to 20 million Pacific oysters per year, bringing year-round employment to the area, along with the production of an environmentally friendly, sustainable, and healthy food source for sale and distribution both locally and worldwide. However, as you've heard here today, seed security for such operations has been identified as an impediment to mariculture development in Alaska and has certainly been a consideration in the development of our own program. In the interest of keeping this limited in time, I will simply state that altering the Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund through HB 76 by making it accessible to prospective hatchery operators will help to provide better seed security for the state's mariculture industry. There are many other benefits associated with mariculture development. Ms. Decker spoke to some of those, but in the interest of time, I'll instead close by restating Silver Bay Seafood's support for House Bill 76, and I thank you for your consideration of this important legislation.
Are there questions for Mr. Sheridan? Senator,
I know this. You got a time issue here, but in your letter, Mr. Sheridan, of February 20th, you mentioned that development of shellfish and seaweed could help mitigate ocean acidification. Could you briefly touch on how that works?
Sure. I can't overstate my expertise in this area. Salmon biologist for a hatchery operator in Southeast Alaska and a fishery biologist for the state of Alaska, so I have some experience and interest in this area. There are, with regards to kelp production, there are large-scale experiments underway in Puget Sound that Ms. Decker would be better able to speak to. They are looking at the use of large-scale kelp production to potentially offset some of the impacts of ocean acidification on regional scale. And so that's certainly something that folks are thinking about in Alaska. I personally live in Cordova, Alaska. I'm on the board of directors for Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation. And if OA is to continue along current trajectories, there's been a significant amount of research in Prince William Sound that suggests its impacts will be felt very hard in Prince William Sound due to water chemistry and circulation patterns. So in Prince William Sound, you have the potential for co-locating large-scale kelp production in locations dispersed throughout the sound that could have positive impacts, ecological benefits for certainly salmon hatchery production, but also for juvenile fish production for all species in that area.
Follow-up, Senator Stevens?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sheridan, thank you for joining Senate Finance today.
Thank you very much.
Tommy Marsh is back online. Mr. Marsh, are you available?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My apologies for getting disconnected earlier. My name is Tommy Marsh. I reside in Ketchikan. I'm currently the president of the Volunteer Board of Oceans Alaska. Oceans Alaska is a nonprofit shellfish and seaweed hatchery, and we are a critical piece of infrastructure for the growth of the mariculture industry. Oceans Alaska is working to support the mariculture industry and economic development in Alaska. We support as it will allow shellfish and seaweed hatcheries to access loan funds for operational cost of seed, which is being raised from mariculture farmers. This also will allow the mariculture industry to grow because without a consistent, healthy seed source, the industry cannot expand. We also support HB 76 because it places shellfish and seaweed hatcheries on a path to financial stability. And HB 76 will also enable the mariculture industry to grow past the constraint of limited seed supply, because without consistent, healthy sources of seed, the industry cannot expand. This field is very important, as hatcheries like Ocean Alaska have a difficult time accessing operating funds. If this bill passes, Ocean Alaska tends to apply for a loan. This will help get us through the developmental stages of the industry's growth and until Ocean Alaska can be sustained on its own through seed sales to industry. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Marsh. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, in Seattle, Marcos Shear. Are you there, Marcos?
Good afternoon, and thank you, Senator McKinnon and members of the Finance Committee for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House Bill 76. My name is Marcos Shear. I am the manager and a principal of Premium Aquatics, LLC, which is an Alaska limited liability company that is in the process of developing a multi-species mariculture operation about 6 miles south of Craig on Prince of Wales Island. I'm originally from Ketchikan. I grew up on Prince of Wales. And I've been involved in the seafood industry since the mid-80s, first as a processor, then on operations for a company out of Ketchikan, Silver Lining Seafoods, and then became an attorney and have represented companies in the seafood industry from commercial fishery from, say, California to the Bering Sea. And now we are embarking on this, which we hope will be a critical part of the economic base in Southeast for many decades to come. We anticipate the first phase of this operation. They employ as many as 50 people year-round, which I think would be a significant addition to the Craig and Prince of Wales economy. I think that House Bill 76 is a vital part of that development. In fact, part of our business plan is relying on Oceans Alaska and other hatcheries in Alaska to provide the raw material that we need to develop our operation. We plan to produce Pacific oysters initially, as well as kelp. The intention is to expand into multiple species of kelp and multiple species of shellfish, including rock scallops and sea cucumbers and any number of other commercially viable species that come from Alaska. I note that the Alaska regulations require that all seed from indigenous species in Alaska be produced within the boundary of Alaska, which makes this fund and making access to these funds even more important. So in closing, we strongly support the House Bill 76, and we ask that you pass it from committee and pass it so we can aid in the development of what I think is the greatest opportunity for economic development in Alaska in many years. Thank you, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. The next person waiting to testify is Trevor Sandy from the Alaska Shellfish Growers Association, hailing out of Ketchikan. Trevor, are you available?
Yeah, good afternoon, Senator McKinnon and members of the committee. I am a professional engineer and construction contractor turned oyster farmer and recently seaweed farmer. I really want to just share my experiences and why House Bill 76 was important to me. I started an oyster farm just because of curiosity in this industry. It seemed like it could be viable. I became interested while I was designing the Oceans Alaska floating processing facility, so I applied for a farm site about a mile from my house. I could see it from my house is how I picked the site. Here I am 7 years later. My goal was to build $1 million a year business in 5 years. I didn't quite make it, but I can see the finish line. This Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund was tremendously important to my business plan. So I operate a R&M Engineering in Ketchikan, which is a medium-sized engineering firm and a fairly large construction company, but even so, it took a tremendous amount of personal resources to put into this farm, and the big difference between my other businesses is there's no return while these suckers are growing. So it's been 5 years, and we finally started selling oysters about a year ago. So I have three terms. Working with the Department of Commerce was quite pleasant, and we're due to start paying the first loan back, I believe, next year. So as we grow, and as the two previous business owners testified, it's probable that there's going to be a very, very large oyster economy in Alaska within the next 5 to 10 years. And this, we will need hatcheries in Alaska for seed security, not only for supply, but also from disease. And we also need to develop an Alaskan brood stock, which are a collection of oysters that have kind of proven to grow fast in Alaskan cold water. So some oysters grow faster than others, and this would be our ability to harvest those and breed them selectively to get a really nice, fast-growing, hardy, disease-resistant oyster. I guess... all of our seed comes from Hawaii right now. There are several other permitted suppliers, but basically everything that we have in the state comes from Alaska, or comes to Alaska from Hawaii. So this bill will encourage, you know, hatcheries to expand and hopefully have an Alaska supply. When I started farming out of the gate, I was delayed 2 years because there were no oysters available. At that time, it was due to ocean acidification. But as these other hatcheries come online, it's going to really put a pressure on the current seed supply. I encourage you to support this, and I really didn't have any other comments except that the program worked great for me.
Mr. Sandy, thank you for calling into Senate Finance today and sharing your story. Are there questions from committee members? The next person waiting online to testify is Tamson Peoples, Blue Evolution, hailing out of Kodiak.
Hello, thank you, Madam Chair and committee, for taking our comments today. My name is Tamson Peoples, and I am the Alaska Mariculture Manager for Blue Evolution. Blue Evolution is a company based in California that works with local farmers pioneering commercial seaweed mariculture in the state of Alaska. In 2016, I designed and built Alaska's first commercial seaweed hatchery in the University of Alaska Southeast Anderson Building in Juneau. This past fall, I moved to Kodiak and designed a larger and more efficient hatchery at the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center. This new hatchery was able to produce over 70,000 feet of seeded line with kelp seedlings, and we are working below half capacity this past season. The design and installation of these hatcheries, especially this most recent Kodiak hatchery, were the first major hurdles and investments Blue Evolution made in the state. We encountered several challenges which any startup or business in Alaska will experience. But a major challenge for us is just the cost of shipping and installing large materials. Our ability to work in cooperation with the NOAA lab allowed us to reduce our costs, but there are only so many labs with seawater intakes in the state. As a lifelong Alaskan and as a marine biologist, I wholeheartedly support responsible mariculture in the state. Alaskans are the first step in any mariculture operation, not only for production, but as Mr. Sandy said, it's also the large pinch point in terms of seed production. I believe House Bill 76 will allow individuals, nonprofits, and entrepreneurs to access the funds and resources to help jumpstart this industry in the state, which, again, I am wholeheartedly supportive, not just because of my job, but because of, as Ms. Decker said, we have the potential to make this an amazing state for mariculture. Thank you.
Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. Is there questions from committee members? Thank you, Ms. Pebbles. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on the CS for House Bill 27, I'm sorry, House Bill 76? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Senator Bishop, can you review the fiscal note for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, appropriation is investments, allocation is investments. The OMB component number is 383. $6,400 from the Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund. The source number is 1224. The analysis is the legislation would create a new loan type and therefore require updated regs and a new application, training of loan staff, and internal policy and procedure updates. An increase in operating expenditure authority from the Revolving Loan Fund in the amount of $6,400 would be needed in the first year to cover the cost of the regulations project. The second fiscal note is for the Department of Fish and Game, appropriation of statewide support services. The allocation is in the Commissioner's office. The OMB component number is 2175, and that is a zero fiscal note, Madam Chair.
Are there questions on the fiscal note from committee members? Seeing hearing none, amendments are due by this Thursday at 5 p.m. With that, we will be waiting for information from the department on the fiscal health of the current fund. $5 million available, $100,000 limit, $300 per year. $300,000 limit is currently in place. I'm waiting for, yes, thank you. So we'll get some backup for that and hopefully have another conversation surrounding this bill sometime early next week. We do have competing time for our budget at this point also. If I could direct committee members' attention to House Bill 128 and ask you to pull that bill. I'd like to invite Representative Ortiz to the microphone, along with Mary Hakala, staff to Representative Ortiz, to present House Bill 128.
For the record, my name is Dan Ortiz. I represent District 36, Southern Southeast Alaska.
Mary Hakala, staff to Rep. Ortiz.
Thank you again, Madam Chair, for and members of the committee for granting us so much of your valuable time to the issue of mariculture development in Alaska. Before I begin talking about House Bill 128, I'd like to take the opportunity to thank again Senator Stevens for his work on Senate Bill 89, the Senate companion bill to HB 128. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, with over 30,000 miles of coastline, pristine waters, talented entrepreneurs, and marketing infrastructure, Alaska does have tremendous untapped potential to grow mariculture in the state of Alaska. Very briefly, 128 allows nonprofits to apply for and pursue enhancement or restoration projects involving shellfish, with species ranging from red and blue king crab, sea cucumber, abalone, gooey duck, razor clams, and more. HB 128 creates the regulatory framework needed for management of shellfish enhancement projects. The bill allows research to continue on a larger scale that can make a difference in rehabilitation and restoration efforts. HB 128 sets out stringent safety standards to ensure sustainability and health of existing wild stocks. Shellfish produced under an enhancement permit become a common property resource available for common use when returned to the wild. The bill provides for cost recovery and designated harvest areas under guidelines established by the Department of Fish and Game. Administrative procedures parallel those for salmon enhancement projects, providing efficiencies that minimize administrative costs to the state. In summary, Madam Chair, HB 128 establishes a sound, sustainable approach to developing the state's shellfish resources and mariculture industry. And with that, I'd like to pass the baton over to Mary Hakala, who will take you through a sectional review of the bill.
If we could have a brief at ease. We're back on the record. Thank you for that introduction, Representative Ortiz.
I was having a brief conversation offline with senators to see if we could move directly into the public hearing, and that we'll take the sectional up on behalf of the public at a later date to try to advance the meeting forward for those who've been waiting. The committee has supported that direction. Again, thank you for the introduction of House Bill 128, an act relating to the management of enhanced stock of shellfish, authorizing certain nonprofit organizations to engage in shellfish enhancement projects relating to application fees for salmon hatchery permits, and providing for an effective date. The public hearing is now open on House Bill 128. The first invited testimony from the sponsor, at the request of the sponsor, is Ms. Julie Decker, Chair of the Alaska Mariculture Task Force, followed by Sam Rabong from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. If both individuals could join us at the microphones. Ms. Decker, please proceed with your public testimony.
Thank you. I'm Julie Decker, Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, and testifying on behalf of the Mariculture Task Force. I'll keep it brief. Generally, this is, like I said, one of the top priorities necessary to move the industry forward. This will allow a framework to continue to make progress with our shellfish enhancement programs, including the King Crab Project that's been worked on for over 10 years by a group of researchers and industry. They're waiting for this. The industry is not interested in investing more money until they can see a path forward for how they could potentially actually do this on a large scale. So that's all I have for you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Decker. Sam, your name for the record, and then please proceed with testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sam Rabong. I'm with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, statewide aquaculture planning and permitting. The Fish and Game is supportive of this bill. It's modeled after our existing salmon fishery enhancement statutes that have been in place since the mid-70s. And I'll leave it at that unless there's questions.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for joining us today. I have Jenny Ecker online, a professor at UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Science. Did you have testimony to present or just available for questions?
I have a brief statement that I'd like to read if there's time available.
Jenny, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jenny Eckert. I'm a fisheries professor in the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm a shellfish expert, a marine ecologist, and I've been working in Alaska since 2000. I'm currently teaching a course in aquaculture, and happy to answer any general questions that you might have, and I definitely thank you for your support of this growing aquaculture industry in Alaska. So since 2007, I've worked on king crab rehabilitation, and I serve as the science director and the co-chair of the Alaska King Crab Research, Rehabilitation, and Biology Program. So I'd like to speak to the need for rehabilitation for shellfish in Alaska, in particular king crab. So king crab is native to Alaska, as you know, and many king crab stocks in the Gulf of Alaska crashed in the 1980s and have not recovered since. Most of these fisheries are closed, and overfishing is likely caused the decline, either through accidental bycatch or through unintentional overfishing. At the time, we didn't necessarily understand the fishing rates that we were harvesting at. And many of this overharvesting was actually probably conducted by foreign fleets, which were allowed to fish in the state up until the 1970s. So in the last 40 years, these king crab stocks have not recovered. And so we've been doing research to investigate the feasibility of potentially rehabilitating these stocks. We've learned much about king crabs in the process, in order to identify where the bottlenecks and potentially the reasons for this lack of recovery. Through this research, we think that the bottleneck is in the early life history, which leads to the potential for rehabilitating stocks through raising young in hatcheries and then outplanting them into the wild. In order for this to go forward in any large scale, this bill would have to be passed because it's currently not allowed in the state of Alaska to put out shellfish in any large scale. With that, I'd like to thank Representative Ortiz and you and the legislature for your work on this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for joining Senate Finance, Ms. Eckert. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for sharing your story and living in Alaska. We'll move to general public hearing. The first person here in Juneau, Jeff Hetrich. And if I could invite Larry Cotter to the microphone at the same time. Mr. Hetrich, welcome to Senate Finance. Your name for the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Jeff Hetrich. I'm the director of the Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery and the Ocean Acidification Lab in Seward, Alaska. We're operated by Chugach Regional Resources Commission, which is an umbrella organization for Native communities in South Central Alaska through Prince William Sound and Lower Cook Inlet. I, too, am a member of the Alaska Shellfish Mariculture Task Force, and like Dr. Eckert, a member of ACRAB for king crab restoration. I'm not sure the legislature or many of the public in Alaska realize that the dire status of our shellfish stocks are in Alaska. Once where people could simply go to beach and harvest clams, other shellfish, cockles, those sorts of things, butter clams, most of those opportunities are non-existent. And like Dr. Eckert said, there hasn't been a king crab fishery in Kodiak in almost 40 years. At the Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery, we spent the last 15 years developing the technology to raise these animals. We raise sea cucumbers, blue and red king crab, cockles, razor clams, butter clams, little neck clams, purple hinge rock scallops. We pretty much have developed the technology for all these species. We've done some experimental work with outstocking these clams under permits from the Fish and Game. They're experimental research permits. We stock villages in Port Graham, Seldovia. In the past, I've done things in Prince William Sound. We have the capacity to do this, but right now it's all as research. This legislation would allow us to go to larger scales, the community of Seward, Homer, Kodiak, Old Harbor, Juneau. Fishing groups could contract a hatchery to produce crabs for those areas. We could also produce shellfish, which we have been doing for some of our villages for enhancement to bring these species back. This legislation is also important for the hatchery financially. We rely on seed sales for the shellfish mariculture industry, which you've heard is now finally developing, which could provide revenue for the hatchery. But also clients for shellfish enhancement could provide revenue to be coupled with funding we get through BIA and through other research projects. So this has been a long process. We're hoping that that the Senate passes this and makes this legislation a reality. Thank you.
Other questions from committee members? I would like to place on the record, Senator Stevens has been very gracious and actually asked me personally to hold advancement of some of his bill to allow the House members to have their bills in front of us. So I do want to acknowledge that Senator Stevens has been very gracious in his pursuit of legislation to allow his colleagues to bring these important issues before us today. So thank you, Senator Stevens. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Hetrich. We appreciate your comments. Mr. Cotter,
welcome
to Senate Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Larry Cotter. I am the CEO for the Aleutian Pribilof Island Community Development Association, otherwise referred to as APICTA. APICTA is one of the six CDQ community development quota groups that operate primarily in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands. Our purpose is to develop sustainable local economies in each of our member communities. I'm going to be very brief because I think I could simply endorse what everybody else has said. I think this is, both bills are important. It provides us with an opportunity to move forward with the development of a new future for Alaska that I think is going to be very meaningful, and I would simply urge the committee to move the bill forward. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Mr. Cotter, thank you for joining Senate
thank
Finance
you, ma'am.
Today. I have multiple people online, so I'll just go through it. They're online from questions. They are from the department, from the administration. Elizabeth Noodleman from the Department of Revenue, fish tax. Do you have any comments on the bill before us?
No.
Alpheus Bullard, Legislative Legal. Any comments on the drafting of the bill before us?
Members of the committee, Chair of the committee, this is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal, and I have no comments, but I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Alpheus. Seth Bosang, Department of Law, any comments on the bill before us?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is Seth Bosang from the Department of Law, and we don't have any comments, but we are available for questions.
Thank you, Seth, for joining Senate Finance today. Brad Mayan, Department of Law, Anchorage, any comments?
No comments for me as well.
Thank you. Bruce Dale, Department of Fish and Game.
This is Bruce Dale with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I'm on for House Bill 129 to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'd like to invite Mary Hakala back to the microphone. If we could do a quick sectional run-through. I have reviewed it in the packet.
Thank you for the record, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mary Hakala, staff to Representative Ortez. The sectional. Section 1 provides the Board of Fisheries authority to direct the Department of Fish and Game to manage enhanced shellfish stocks beyond broodstock needs for cost recovery harvest. Section 2 increases the permit application fee for new private nonprofit salmon hatcheries from $100 to $1,000. Section 3 adds a new Chapter 12 to Title 16, Shellfish Stock Enhancement Projects. I'll summarize and consolidate some of the sections. There are quite a few substantive sections in Section 3. It provides direction to the Commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game on issuance of permits and establishes a $1,000 application fee for shellfish projects. It directs the Commissioner to consult with technical experts and outlines a public hearing, notification, and input process prior to issuance of a permit. It sets permit conditions, including cost recovery fisheries, the harvest, sale, and release of enhancement project-produced shellfish and broodstock sources. It expressly prohibits introduction of genetically modified shellfish into state waters. It outlines terms for modification or revocation of a permit and describes reporting requirements. It specifies that shellfish produced under an approved enhancement project are a common property resource and outlines two options for cost recovery in special harvest areas. It provides definitions of relevant terms, including shellfish. Shellfish is a species of crustacean, mollusk, or other invertebrate in any stage of its life cycle that is indigenous to state waters. Going on to Section 4, it provides the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission authority to issue special harvest area entry permits. Section 5 defines legal fishing gear for special harvest area entry permit holders. Section 6 exempts shellfish raised in a private nonprofit shellfish project from the farmed fish definition. Section 7 and 8 establishes state corporate income tax exemption for a nonprofit corporation holding a shellfish fishery enhancement permit. Section 9 exempts shellfish harvested under a special harvest permit from seafood development taxes. Section 10 establishes an effective date for the salmon hatchery permit application fee described in Section 2 of the bill. Section 11 authorizes the Department of Fish and Game to adopt implementing regulations. Section 12 establishes an immediate effective date for Section 11. Section 13 establishes an effective date for Section 8. And that completes my walkthrough.
Are there questions from committee members on the structure of the bill? Thank you for that sectional analysis. We're going to defer the fiscal note. We are waiting for an updated CFEC that should be a zero fiscal note, but we'll set aside the fiscal note for the next time the bill is in front of us. With that, I'd like to set this bill aside. Amendments are due this Thursday by 5 p.m. on House Bill 128. The next item before us is Senate Bill, let me close the public hearing. Go back to 128. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 128? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. that, the next item for us is Senate Bill 142, the capital budget. We're going to need a few minutes to set up the computers on this, brief at ease, while we set up the presentation. We're back on the record. Senate Finance, it's still April 3rd, 2018. The time is 3:06 p.m. The next item before Senate Finance is SB 142. It's an appropriation bill, the capital budget. I'd like to invite Director Pitney to the microphone. Ms. Pitney, welcome to Senate Finance. If you would identify yourself for the record. And then we have a presentation that is available online. The presentation is labeled State of Alaska FY 2019 Capital Budget and Economic Recovery Act Overview. It's presented by Director Pat Pitney from the Office of Management and Budget. The presentation is labeled Senate Finance Committee 4-3-2018. And Ms. Pitney, if you would just, when we change slides, if for those following at home, if you would identify the page that we're changing to, it would make it easier for others to follow.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm the director for the Office of Management and Budget. And thank you for the opportunity to do the capital budget overview. On slide two, this year is a little bit different from past years. We have actually provided two different capital appropriation bills. One we've referred to as the base capital budget, and that is the kind of the minimum capital budget to meet our match and maintenance requirements. It is quite small from past years in the $160 million range. In terms of unrestricted general fund, and of course, then it matches significant federal funds. It provides support for federal funds. It has designated general funds to support energy projects. That's through the extraordinary earnings of the power cost equalization. And for the first time in my state budget career, it includes technology upgrades. We have not done our technology upgrades for the past several years, and this is a few critical projects that have been delayed given our fiscal circumstance. The second budget that we provided was the Alaska Economic Recovery Act. That's Senate Bill 140. This particular Recovery Act is focused on deferred maintenance, and these are all small projects and would impact the construction industry for the state of Alaska, and they're all very much kind of shovel-ready projects, all on prioritized maintenance lists. I'm on chart three. This is our capital budget trend over the last several years. Our 2013 was a peak capital budget year. If you look at the base capital budget compared to 2013, it's over a 90% reduction. In the years 2016 through 2019, in terms of the base capital budget, very little investment have been done in deferred maintenance. Do appreciate the deferred maintenance funding that was part of the FY 2018 bill in this last year, and we believe we've put that to good use. The things that are lost in the small capital budget are largely the community-supported projects, whether it be water systems or school maintenance or the biggest piece out of that 2013 to 2018 or even 2019 is the amount of funding that is going out to individual communities to do their projects, and of course then the employment impact of a capital budget. We categorize our I'm on page four. We categorize our base capital or our capital budget collectively, and federal match and leverage is kind of the first thing we focus on. $103 million leverages a total of $1.1 billion. So the primary component of that is both highway and airport match, federal highway and federal airport match. But there's also significant matches for the housing through AHFC. There's federal opportunities there, and through our Department of Economic Environmental Conservation on the water system projects. The housing request here is roughly a 50-50 match, and that match is largely also related to federal funds, and the $15 million is, these are the regular AHFC housing programs, the homeless assistance program, the teacher and trooper housing, so they're very traditional from the past several years. The energy projects this year, the first time in 2 years there's been investment in the rural energy program, and that's again through the earnings of the power cost equalization, and that shows up as designated general funds. So you see UGF is very small at $1 million with $34 million in total. The maintenance, the primary piece of maintenance there is the ferry overhauls. That's at 13 and a half of that 16. The other pieces of maintenance are the in corrections where we have some security shortfalls that have to be addressed. I mentioned earlier on the information technology, there are 7 projects associated with this information technology request. That $14 million in unrestricted general fund, there's about $30 million in designated general funds, and the remainder is federal, largely associated with the health and social services technology upgrades. We're treating the information technology programs a little bit differently this year. With the centralization of our Office of Information Technology, we are trying to drive the cost of implementations down and get more efficiencies from the hardware and software systems that we're using. And so of the 7 projects that were requested, we have set a target of driving 10% out of each of those projects. But we don't know if one project we might be able to drive 15% out of and another project only 5% out. So we've collapsed all of those projects into one appropriation that will be monitored at the Office of Management and Budget, and the allocation level is associated with the project. But in total, we need to drive 10% out of that based on what the departments have asked us to do, and that's why it's set in the governor's office. And that high priority investments category has 2 projects, and it's originally it was the seismic funding for the area of the ANWR 1002 area. We've asked for that project funding to be redirected to the enhanced 911 statewide system and due diligence for Department of Revenue and Department of Natural Resources. So the base capital budget at $1.3 billion, of which $160 is general fund. And
let's see if we could pause. Yep. Senator Bishop.
Madam Chair, on the redirection of the 1002 money, I don't want to take time for your presentation to have a conversation on that, but I would like to defer that for a later conversation on this capital budget, ma'am.
Thank you. Ms. Pitney, please continue.
So this is a little bit more information on the base capital budget. I'm on page 5. And I've covered many of these. On the energy side, there's also the rural power systems upgrade that was also funded with earnings from the Power Cost Equalization Fund. Unless there's questions, I think I'll pass. I would want to say on that high priority investments, it says AKLNG legal and financial due diligence. This is Department of Natural Resource and Department of Revenue funding to do legal and financial due diligence on the state's behalf for the AKLNG project. This is not AKLNG money funding to go to, say, AGDC. And that, you know, a couple of significant issues is the royalty in kind versus royalty in value decision that DNR has to make. And then the legal and financial setup for the Department of Revenue to recommend or not recommend state funding of the next steps on the process. So a small amount of due diligence funding there. Jumping into the Economic Recovery Act.
Slide six,
thank you. The plan was put forward largely focused on creating jobs. Our workforce, our construction industry workforce is down significantly, and I'll show that on the next slide. But with an $800 million general fund investment over 3 years, we felt like we could leverage $1.4 billion in total economic impact with federal, local, and private funds. The package was focused on deferred maintenance, energy projects, and it also included funding for the Port of Anchorage and a match. The funding source for this, knowing we didn't have a fiscal plan in place, was the extension of the implementation of the 1.5% wage tax that was capped at 2 times the permanent fund dividend. This tax in place for 2.5 years would cover that $800 million. Again, the focus was on the construction industry and the jobs. We're down 3,600 jobs in the construction industry since 2013. We believe overall that the money in the pipeline from the large capital years in 12, 13, and 14 is largely being utilized, and we'll see another small reduction going forward into 18 and 19. If there aren't other areas to backfill, for instance, federal construction funding. We also believe it's important to keep the construction jobs in the state with the opportunities that the North Slope, that opening of 1002 has, as well as the potential for the AKLNG project. The more construction talent we lose from the state, the harder it's going to be to speed up those projects. And so we wanted to have a large investment to keep that construction industry in the state. Based on lower 48 information, during the recession in 2008-2009, it showed that for every percentage point in job losses, Medicaid population grew by 4%. And so as our recession continues, trying to get out of the recession may also help reduce our traditional Medicaid population. Deferred maintenance. I appreciate this body's taking the time to go through the deferred maintenance presentation earlier this session. It is a significant issue that the state has to pay attention to every year. This is just a quick summary that the state owns 2,200 facilities. I'm on page 8. Of those, 200 of those facilities are large, at 10,000 square feet or larger. Replacement value, $8.6 billion. And we have all sorts of facilities throughout the state. So it's one size doesn't fit all, but we do have to maintain our assets. The deferred maintenance backlog over the past several years has been declining, with an uptick just recently. I'm on page 9. The 5 years of deferred maintenance funds of $100 million allowed agencies and entities to plan forward and move that deferred maintenance backlog down. And without consistency in funding, it's harder to move all projects in a very consistent and rational mechanism, but we also have to balance that with the fiscal situation the state is in and focus on how we do it. So specifically to the projects that we were putting forward in the Alaska Economic Recovery Act, first we started with a K-12 major maintenance grant program, and today there's statute, I believe it's 1410, As schools send in their highest deferred maintenance projects, there's a required local match in most cases. And we have a prioritized list throughout the state. There's 60 communities on that list at this time. And $70 million goes down about a third of the current year's list, and they update that list every year. Then the university deferred maintenance. University is one of our largest facility owners, and this would address a lot of their deferred maintenance priorities. If they have about a $50 million annual target, this would catch up and then move into, in the future, beyond 21, down to a $50 million level. The state deferred maintenance projects include Health and Social Services, Department of Transportation, and several others. We also had another area of critical infrastructure and repair. We've included the Port of Anchorage Phase 1. This would require a $60 million match from the municipality of Anchorage, $67 million match. But that would get them through Phase 1 and prepared for a larger phase, Phase 2 and 3. It also includes highway match to maximize other available federal funds. At the end of each year, a state that doesn't utilize all of their federal match, that goes back into a pool, and with additional match, we are able to attract that lapsed federal money into our state. Other community needs, the Municipal Hardware, Municipal Harbor Fund, Facility Fund is in there. That's where municipal harbors are also matched by municipal areas. The Alaska Energy Authority bulk fuel upgrades, the weatherization program, and a few other AHFC programs are in there as community needs going forward. These are just examples of the prioritization of the school district projects on our OMB website. You can find the entire list. The K-12 major maintenance has a very strict prioritization. These are in priority order. The university deferred maintenance, an example of their list. Every institution has full lists, and this is, again, just an example, but you can see the type of projects that are being proposed and that are on their high priority list. The state deferred maintenance here are the ones that are on the agency's priority list. So all of them are they're small project, and they promote the bidding process, and the size of the projects really put the money into local contractors' hands. And then we've talked about the other items on the Alaska Recovery Act, bulk fuel, municipal hardware, harbor projects. The harbor projects, I'm on page 14. These are in priority order based on the statute for the municipal hardware projects, so you can see which ones would fit within this Economic Recovery Act. And with that is the overview of these two bills.
The only bill in front of Senate Finance is Senate Bill 142. Are there questions on Senate Bill 142? Senator Bishop wanted to discuss the seismic. We can do that at another time for that reallocation. Senator Bishop, I know that you have a committee that needs to be chaired in just a few minutes, so you're excused.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You need to go. There are items that Director Pitney referenced in another bill that is not before us. If senators would like some of those items that should have been included in the capital budget there, if you let my office know sooner rather than later. The administration is classifying things that have been in our budgets for years as economic recovery at this time. So we may want to move those into the capital budget so they get funded this year. Any questions for Ms. Pitney? Seeing and hearing none, we'll set that bill aside. Thank you, Director Pitney. Tomorrow at 9 a.m., we have a joint hearing with the Senate Resources. We will have a presentation by Mr. Mark Finley, a General Manager of Global Energy Markets, BP America, the World Energy Outlook. At 1:30, we hope to have the operating budget, but that's a question at this point. I don't think that we will because we won't have, well, we may have met, and if we receive it, we'll receive it tomorrow morning and then have it. So we may have an initial presentation on the operating budget. We also have scheduled HB 31 sexual assault training and examine kits, as well as I plan, if it's ready, to bring up SB 92 vessel registration titles and derelict vehicles. We'll add a few things if we have other items ready to go in front of the operating budget starting to consume most of our days. Is there anything else to come before the committee? You know what I know. We're adjourned.